This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University. We respectfully acknowledge that we broadcast on unceded ancestral territory of the Coast Salish peoples. We stream online at cjsf.ca. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and listen to our podcasts on SoundCloud and our website, cjsf.ca. Have a request? Text or call us at 778-782-2573.
Welcome to Teachings in the Air. Podcast with Jerry Oldman, coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit, because that's what health means. Hello, this is Sahil Thut, coming to you from Brandon, Manitoba, with Teachings in the Air. Oh, today, I'm so lucky to have wonderful guests with me. And I'm calling this podcast, Under the Influence. It's about the trauma of money. It's about, you know, our world today with money as Indigenous people. You know, to give it a bit of context, I wanted to talk about, first off, about Indigenous people, BC, that means before contact. And all of us were hunter-gatherers, fisher people, living off the land. Protein was animals and birds, and we'd dig roots. And, you know, we were very healthy people. And we were also astute business people, because we would trade with other nations. The example I use is the grease trail from Bilicula into the interior. And they would trade Ulligan grease. And Ulligan grease is like liquid gold, you know, it's just chock full of omega-3 and stuff to help you be healthy. You know, so I know they've done this all across the continent. Our people were traders, who were business people. But we weren't using money, what we call money today. We were trading goods, things of value, canoes, flint, food, clothing. That was what we were trading. And probably knowledge on medicines and different things we would trade. And so we were very healthy people. Then all of a sudden, contact. And as I was getting ready for this podcast, I would remember my elders talking, and a surprise that these were human beings, but they were different in language and color of their skin and their dress and how they done their hair. Everything was seemed to be different. But they walked like us, you know. They needed food and water. So there were these similarities, but these glaring differences. And one of the stories I heard was You know, they gave this man gold. And that man started laughing, jumping around, rolling on the ground. He had this handful of gold. And they could see the impact it had on this one individual. Gold. My late father said that when he's a little boy, if the men wanted a rifle, the store owner would say, you fill the barrel with gold dust nuggets and you can have the rifle. So we started to engage then with these people. They wanted fur, you know, beaver, and beaver was a big item. All the men, not all the men, many men in Europe were wearing beaver hats, hats made out of beaver fur. So they started to engage with these newcomers. And I think of the ones that first come here. And not to generalize or to be very realistic, the ones that came were looking for wealth, for gold, you know, precious metals, precious stones, fur. So they were commercial capitalists that were looking for wealth. And to them, wealth meant power. So I tell people today, those ones were in love with power and they would do anything to gain it. And our people, meanwhile, believed in the power of love, of respect for the food, for the water, for the air, for the trees, for everything around. This belief that we're all interconnected. I know in my culture, that's the way they were thinking. And also other people I've shared with different nations had similar. So I don't want to say I'm speaking for all of the indigenous people. But for Statliam, you know, and others that I've talked to, that we live by this philosophy of the power of love. And we try to discourage the love of power in our midst, because we could see the harm that would come from it. So the history of this first contact and how it developed. You know, I wondered why my people didn't have stricter immigration policies and laws. You know, because it just simply wasn't possible. Because by 1854, 85% of our population died from smallpox. And then all of a sudden around that same time, and of course it makes sense, they were carrying the smallpox, these newcomers. All of a sudden there was 10,000 gold seekers in the town of Alulowit in 1854. So they put a strain on the food sources. Our people started trading dried salmon with them, deer meat, you know, so we were dragged or thrust into this new way. And it's about money. And along with that money, of course, there was alcohol. The Hudson Bay Company, the trading companies would give away alcohol because they could see the impact on the people they were trading with. It would weaken them. And they could get, for them, it would be a better deal. You know, if I was to trade with you and then I negotiated with you, you know, the best thing is, it'd be fair to both of us. We'd both benefit. But in these cases, it wasn't so. And that's where, when I first heard of the trauma of money. Light bulbs were going off in my brain, or lightning flashes, and I say, "That's this is it. This is one of the, I guess you could say, the core issues and impacts on Indigenous people. Is this whole world of money, you know? And because when you say money, you know, we start to talk also about poverty, unemployment, violence, different feelings that come up from not having it or being prevented from having it, because I know that's part of the history. So I'd like my listenership to know that I'm blessed today, and we're all going to be blessed to hear, it seems appropriate to me, life givers that have been looking into this topic of the trauma of money. Because trauma means to be wounded. And what can be wounded on a human being? Their mind, their body, their spirit, and their heart can be wounded. So I'm just so happy to, for all of us to explore this world of money, because there also can be, you know, when we look at the other side of the picture, a lot of benefits, a lot of goodness can be done with this new way. So I'd like to introduce you to my guests and have them introduce themselves. And I thought to first go around, we'd talk about our own life in the world of money, you know, and trauma. So I have with me today Chantel and Vicky, who are out there in the world spreading the word, you know, that there's another way, you know. So the last time I talked to you, I didn't know who to introduce first or how this will go. So I'm going to leave it in your two hands. And Vicky's pointing at Chantel. So Chantel, I'm going to ask you to, you know, put some teachings in the air and share about your whole journey around the trauma of money.
Thank you so much, Jerry. It's really such an honor to be here in this really sacred container with you and with Vicky, who I've had multiple pleasures of co-facilitating with. So I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I am a uninvited settler of European descent. So I am aware I don't know who my father is, so I don't know that lineage of in my ancestral lineage. I don't know that side. I work and live on the traditional territory of the Musqueam, Kwantlen, and Tsawwassen's people, which is known as Richmond, BC. I am the founder of a school called the Trauma of Money, and we work with folks in a couple different ways. One is we work with people who would like to heal their relationship with money personally. And we also train professionals who would like to help others heal their relationship with money. So we have therapists, we have trauma therapists that get trained by us. We have economists, we have financial professionals, we have folks who work at universities who write curriculums. Anyone that interacts with anyone around money, they may find this program interesting. And many people interact with money and other people. And I'd love to share a little bit about my personal story, my personal journey, because I think it gives some really good indications to what the trauma of money is. Because I think if we live in within capitalism, if we live under colonization, we absolutely experience trauma of money. And this is because those systems create trauma. And it's hard to not have trauma of money without those systems, without being in those systems. So many folks will come to our program and want to focus on their own individual trauma experiences. Like, my parents, you know, did this with money, therefore I feel like I have trauma of money. And while that is incredibly important to explore our own individual experiences, we really believe that understanding collective trauma is a massive part of the key to healing, because so much of the trauma that is experienced is layered. So the healing of that trauma has to be layered. So a little bit about my story. On my LinkedIn profile, you'll see that I started my career in finance at 21 years old, which is young for a finance career. I started as a mortgage broker, but my real career in finance started, I think, when my mother was carrying me in her womb. And I say this because my mom got pregnant with me when she was 18 years old, and she got pregnant as she was grieving the death of her sister. And because she was in a state of deep grieving and she was so young, she was in a situation of extreme scarcity, and scarcity on multiple levels. She was in financial scarcity, she was in emotional scarcity. Lots of scarcity was going on. And this is kind of my entry point into this body and into this world. And I grew up in poverty with a single mother. The father figure, not my biological father, but my brother's father who was around, was a heroin addict, and he was in and out of prison. And that, I always say, is the beginning of my finance career, because you become very hyper aware of money in situations like that. You know, and there is this belief that folks who are in poverty or maybe don't have their finances very organized, or their finances together in a way that dominant culture deems to be successful, there is this belief that they don't think about money too much. They're not maybe good with money. And that's actually not true at all. We know from the research around the psychology of scarcity that if you have financial scarcity, it's on your mind 24/7. You're constantly thinking about money. So I became a money expert at a very, very young age, you know. And growing up in an environment like this, you hear things a lot about money. Like, you hear, no, we can't afford that. You get introduced to comparison at such a young age. That was the moment that it all kind of came together, and I realized, like, wow, the way we show up around money actually has nothing to do with how much financial literacy we have, because I was a finance expert. I knew all the rules about financial literacy, but I was still doing all these different things. And it has more to do with the trauma that we may have experienced. And so I was like, okay, well, I need to go deeper into this. So I went on a 5-year research journey around trauma. And something that became so clear to me was, this is a massive issue that is not isolated to folks who have experienced certain types of trauma. There's actually a massive emphasis on the collective trauma from capitalism, from colonization, and from consumerism that's showing up here. And so that's kind of where a lot of my research went, because I looked at some of my mom's experiences in poverty, and I looked at some of even my individual trauma experiences of incest and all of that. And I really noticed that so much of it was pinpointed to the trauma of capitalism. You know, and people who act out in abusive ways are sometimes doing it because they are traumatized as well. And, you know, the man that abuses the vulnerable young child is looking for a moment of power in an environment where they feel like they've been they have no power because of capitalism and this greed for power. And so that is essentially how the program came together. So we asked this question, like, what impacts our relationship with money? And we came up with this six-layered model, and it was generational trauma, relational trauma, societal trauma, systemic trauma, another category we call laws of nature, which really encourages us to maybe look at different worldviews, not just the worldview of capitalism and dominant culture. And then the last was financial literacy. And we always say financial literacy is the last because we know through our research that when the brain is in a trauma-triggered state or a state of scarcity, it's very challenging to interact with financial literacy because we lose access to our cognitive capacity. And so my work was to gather some of the most incredible experts to come in and teach at these different layers. And that's what we really do, to try and explore all of the intersections between these places so we can have that layered approach to the trauma healing. And I'm so excited to pass the mic to Vicky, who is one of my co-collaborators in this space. And Vicky is going to tell you some more about herself and the incredible work that she does under her own brands as well. And thank you so much for listening and witnessing my story.
Thank you, Chantel. Okay, Vicky.
Nakumik, thank you. I just wanted to give thanks to you, Jerry, to your team for inviting us to be on this podcast. I'm so honored. Like I told you earlier, I went to bed with a smile and woke up with a smile, just excited to be in this space because it was so deep and enriching, the time that we spent together on the workshop that we did. So, and I'm honored and grateful to be here with Chantel as well. Thank you for sharing your story. My name is Vicky Oftermauer, and I am a proud Inuk woman. I call to you from West End Toronto, where I live now. I'm an urban Inuk. But I grew up in community on Baffin Island in Iqaluit with my community on my motherland. I came to work with Chantel through the Fire Weed Fellowship, a fantastic initiative geared towards Indigenous women entrepreneurs and creatives. And also Entrepreneur, we worked together through that program as well. Same thing, geared towards Indigenous entrepreneurs in the North, where, like I said, where I grew up. And come to, you know, work together quite frequently within the Indigenous community. And I mean, I have such a big story too, but I'll just share a little bit of how I got into this work. So my brand, if you will, is Rich Indig Auntie, and I also created a program called Decolonizing Money. And through my experience of growing up, having such a, you know, growing up in community on the land, and then coming to this urban center impacted me. And, you know, hindsight is 2020, but looking back, you know, not to say that life was perfect in community, but it was, as you spoke to, Jerry, it was abundant, you know, this abundance of land, this abundance of the Arctic Ocean and all that, you know, she had to feed us, you know, the abundance of beauty, of community, of, you know, wealth as far as what the land provided for us and how it brought us together. The beauty of the, you know, of the Northern Lights. It was, you know, the going berry picking on the land, you know. Again, in hindsight, I came to realize that my experience of, I guess you could say trauma of money, you know, came when, like, moving south, moving here. And, you know, having, you know, as a child, wanting the latest shoes that everyone was wearing and not feeling, like, good enough because, you know, like, so many things started to impact. It wasn't until we came south that kind of money, the realization that money was a thing, you know, and how it impacted, you know, kind of every choice that we had or didn't have, quite frankly. And through my career as well, you know, I didn't work in community, I worked in kind of, you know, or corporate organizations. You know, I worked in customer service. I had very kind of limited opportunities, you could say, as far as like where I could work, given my just kind of my life experience up until then. And so I was limited to, and I also believe that I was limited to kind of customer service, and that was really all that was an option for me. That being said, I worked my way up in the ranks, so to speak, and I came to realize, I'm really driven. I'm very ambitious, and I'm a good worker, you know. But anyways, long story short, my main reason for how I went from that to where I am now, facilitating and holding space and coaching and encouraging Indigenous women entrepreneurs and creatives to heal their relationship with money is because given those limited options that I had within kind of the corporate world, so to speak, I had no choice but to look at my relationship with money because my options were so limited. There was a very clear cap as to how much I could earn in that world. So I had no choice but to look at alternate ways of kind of shifting my perspective, if you will, my perception of what money is and what is available to me as an Indigenous woman. It really amped up when I, you know, left a marriage and I came to realize how vulnerable I was as a single Indigenous woman again. And part of what drives me today is I do not want Indigenous women to have to feel that vulnerable because of leaving a relationship or entering in a relationship, like Chantel said. It's part of what drives me. And then when the social justice movement amped up after the murder of George Floyd and we were finally, people had new ears to hear with the plight, if you will, of Black people and, you know, kind of in the vein of like entrepreneurship and Indigenous people, of course, people of color all over the world were starting to be heard for the first time. And through my years of personal work of like, kind of tapping into the energy of money, if you will, the energy of abundance that I experienced as a child in community and that you spoke of at the start of this podcast, I came to realize that there's all these Indigenous women, entrepreneurs and creatives who